We're waiting for all the streamers to kick in here. So how you doing today? Tell you what, it has been really freaking cold up here in the Northeast. Woke up to a balmy 15 degrees this morning. Aye. Anyway, we're going to be starting the program here in a minute. Literally. We're going to be talking about some of the current events. We're going to be talking about the wildfires in California and the extreme cold up here. FEMA sent out a newsletter, their monthly newsletter, highlighting winter weather hazards and some other stuff we're going to be going over. And that's what we got going on. So sit back and relax. Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to the north is the Safety Wars for Wednesday, January 8th, 2025. I think I said 24 last night, but it's 2025. How's everybody doing? Okay, microphone is on. Safety FM is on. So we got on a couple of minutes early, gave a brief preview here of what's going on, and not a lot. I mean, I think things are starting to wind down for the Biden administration, and I base that on not only the calendar, not only the news, but also press releases. Not a lot going on out there. But that doesn't matter. Mean that we're not going to be here. There's a lot to talk about in safety. So what have I been doing the last few days? Actually, last 2 weeks. So my customers, I have several customers on the annual safety meeting program. And what normally happens is I have my regular customers. We get those all out in like November, beginning of December, the next year. And they're all planned pretty well. So if you're on in like a third-party auditing system, and there are several out there. So for example, I think I mentioned this about 2 or 3 weeks ago. There are companies out there back in the day. We would be doing a job and we'd say, hey, can you send us your safety plan? This is especially on the 1910-120 projects, hazardous waste site operations and emergency response. And they would send us a copy of their plan and we'd say, yay or nay. We get into a thing of taking on the liability of approving plans. And we've gotten away from that. Some companies still do it. They're like, screw the liability. We have to find out if we're all on the same page. There are other ways of doing that. So what ends up happening was there are third-party auditing services. There's four of them primarily. And inside and outside the United States, they operate where, let's say you're going to be doing industrial painting. They have about 36 areas that your safety plan has got to cover and also has to include 36 items. So what ends up happening is the items, you have to write a plan for those items, which we do help companies do. But what is also in there is that you have to show that you are training on all 30, some of those items. And now some of them require, so for example, you're doing forklifts or power industrial trucks. That's a full-blown 3-day class every 3 years, typically, maximum. If you're doing a first aid CPR, has to be, well, then guess what? That's every 2 years, first aid CPR. If you're required to have mobile elevated work platforms, VWAP, right? Formerly known as scissor lifts and boom lifts and articulating lifts, any type of lift, guess what? That's got to be like every 3 years. And all the other topics are like once a year, you got to review your plan and do training on it. So what we tried to do is get out ahead of this and plan this out for the whole year. So what we've been doing is, and we're looking at publishing these in the very near future and on Amazon. I know I have a lot of stuff I want to publish. It's just the amount of stuff that's necessary there. Here for us to manage is nuts. If you're a longtime listener, you have a pretty damn good idea of what we're going through. But what the idea is to get out ahead of it. So this is what I've been dealing with. I have phone calls. People go, hey, Jimmy, I heard you on Safety Wars, gave you a phone call, 845-269-5772. And we're interested in getting the annual safety meeting program because they're involved in one of these third-party auditing things. We got to be planned out. It's not like, and what happens is the safety professionals, often they get into this thing where there's a million one things to do. They're like, look, I need someone to in the field who's able to write safety plans. Can you do that? Rather than go to one of these generic services where nothing really applies. And I was a subscriber to a lot of those services over the years before I got my act together with it. And it's a little bit cumbersome every week, 15, 20 minutes. Now, not to say that I don't still do that. If a client has an incident, an accident, leading indicator of a problem, okay, then we sit down, we write a safety program, have a meeting. I get pulled in for the meeting for a little bit of a training class, whatever. We still do that, but let's try to at least have a basic framework on how to do it, on what we're doing. And this is also very helpful if you get an OSHA audit. Well, are your people trained? Yeah, we have a training program through the safety meeting system. Plus, we have annual trainings and meetings, meet regulations, and these meetings often meet regulations. So they can't say that they didn't get training because, that's often an accusation that OSHA makes, often a correct accusation, and people get cited for it. The other thing is this, when an insurance company comes in, and normally insurance company comes in on an annual audit, they say, one of the questions that they will ask is, well, do you have a safety meeting program? You can say, yeah, as a matter of fact, I do. We do have one. Here it is. We have it all planned out for the whole year, and here it is. Here it is in a binder here. And you try to print these things out because now, hey, you don't have to worry about computers finding them. Hey, yeah, here it is. Boom. And often, you have to produce these documents rather quickly for a regulatory agency or a client or an insurance company. So we help people out. A good bulk of our business in November, December, January, February is getting all the stuff together. That's what we excel at here. So what do we do? We do it in English, Spanish, and Polish. Those are the three primary languages that we deal with. We issue these things in, and we are also able to put together a video program for you for these. So now, because we've upped our game. So this is what we do. This is, now, news. We're going to start straight out with the, let me pull it up here. All right, so let's do share screen. Let's go to our first commercial break, and we'll from the front line go from
safety
there.
It's Safety Wars with your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Face the harsh reality.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Posel and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It's definitely, it will take some deep dives in some information that you might be interested in.
So here we have today, and hold on. Here.
Want to avoid...
No, wrong one. I got a better organized.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozel with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Yes, I am your father. So I get this. I'm on a lot of reading lists, mailing lists. So this is from, and I've been on this one for many years. And individual, this is from the, where is this from? FEMA, Individual and Community Preparedness. FEMA@servicegovdelivery.com is the email address. And I get this every month. Let's go through this. Because this, in a lot of areas of the country, they're in an, either a deep freeze or there are have been issues. We're going to cover one in the news section of this. Winter brings a new set of challenges to our health, our homes, and our communities, from dropping temperatures to sudden snowstorms and power outages. Preparing now can help ensure that you stay warm, safe, and everything. Well, if you haven't done it by now, you're going to have a problem. And like with all disaster preparation, how long does it take? It's not going to be an overnight thing. It takes a couple of days. Now, if you're in the northern latitudes here, especially in New Jersey, New York area, north of Route 80, normally you have it's a tough winter, right? Why do I say Route 80? Like it's magical? I don't know. That just seems to be the way it works out. Now you have so you're able to go and cycle through, get out the winter hats, the clothes, right? Snow shovels, ice melter, whatever your thing is, and you're able to do that, which I got to pick up more tomorrow. But if you're in the south of that, a lot of times, especially in the south, southern United States, like they got whacked this week with a huge snowstorm and cold, starting down in the Philadelphia area down south. It's just been a complete and total nightmare. And people not knowing literally how to drive, how to do this, how to do that. So what I do is October 17th of every year. How do I know that? Day after my birthday, October 17th, we go and we do an assessment of the house. And it's along the lines of, honey, I got snow shovels ready. I got ice melter. I have some other more advanced ice melting techniques that I employed. I got the snow blower out. And by the way, I use an electric one, big, huge electric one. That's usually all that we really need. And the other thing is, we have if we needed a plowing service for the driveway, I have a pretty long driveway, and with my schedule, I'm not always home. So we get everything all set up. We get everything all cleaned up. And basically, at our other property, we do the same thing. But at the other property, we have another issue going on with fall cleanups. And basically, if you do not get to the other house up in the northern New Jersey area before the second week of November, you're done with the fall cleanup, because it usually rains and freezes, or it snows second week of November, and that's pretty much it with that. And now you're facing the spring with a 4-day spring cleanup on that property. So we try to do all of this ahead of time. Make sure that your garden tools aren't out there. There's no obstructions, nothing, no debris, anything that could get in the way of snow removal. And that's what we end up doing. And let's go get back to the letter. No winter risk. Cold weather can increase the risk of hypothermia, meaning freezing to death, frostbite, which is your skin freezes, and home fires, carbon monoxide poisoning. 60% of temperature-related deaths are due to cold exposure, and winter is the peak season for home fires. A lot of them around this area. Start your preparedness and by understanding those risks so you can make informed decisions about your home, travel, and daily activities. Home heating safety. Keep your home warm, but make sure your heating system is working properly, and you install carbon monoxide, CO, detectors. And if they are battery operated, make sure the batteries are fresh. Use heat sources correctly. Never use your oven to heat your home. Keep anything that can burn at least 3 feet away from fireplaces, wood stoves, or space heaters. Practice fire safety. Home heating is the second leading cause of home fires. Ensure your smoke alarms are working. Keep a fire extinguisher handy and consider downloading U.S. Fire Administration's Fire Safety Guide. Here, on that. Hold on. What do we got there? Okay. All right. So we got to go to on that another time. There. I looked up that document. Hold on. We got people who know I am on the air who decide to text me during the program, and it's usually some kind of emergency. Nope. All right. So, boom, boom, boom. All right. So back to the thing. Sorry, folks. We're living life large here. So preparing for power outages. This happened at our other property yesterday in the coldest part of the day. They had a power outage. So what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to do if you're exposed to have a power outage? Got to have a plan in place. So winter storms can cause power outages that disrupt heat communication and essential devices. Keep your refrigerator and freezer doors closed. Throw away any food that has been exposed to temperatures of 40 degrees or higher for 2 hours or that has an unusual odor, color, or texture. Use generators safely. I'm just reading here. Outdoors, away from windows. How many people get carbon monoxide poisoning every year? Because in generators or similar equipment, the answer is a lot. Plan for medical needs, especially with medical devices, refrigerated medicine, and have a backup plan and consider visiting community warming center if conditions become severe. And ready.gov has a section on power outages. Staying safe on winter roads. I always make sure, I have a pretty new vehicles here. I don't have new vehicles. They're pretty new, right? Fairly recent. Late model is what the old term used to be. But I still carry, what do I carry in them? Too much, some would argue. I carry, let's say I assume that I'm going to be out in the cold a minimum of 2 hours, no matter where I go. So I bring the appropriate clothing for that. I make sure that I have, especially in the winter up here in the southern New York area, and north of here, I always make sure I have a sleeping bag. I always make sure I have those hot hands or the hand warmers. I always make sure that I have a change of clothes, especially boots and socks, right? Make sure I have an extra hat, all the extra stuff, because this is what often happens. I get myself into a situation where people are not prepared and they have a situation and they end up borrowing all my stuff. Now, that's good and bad. It's good because I have the capacity, and that's what you're doing. Is you increase capacity and resilience. You increase safety, right? That's what I try to do. But what ends up happening is they become dependent. Well, Jim has everything. Jim has everything. Well, I tell them, look, maybe Jimmy's not going to have everything. So maintain your vehicle, obviously, and they can always say keep a full tank of gas to prevent fuel line freeze up and everything. That's always a good idea. I know with me, every New Year's Eve, and I started that during Y2K 1999, I make sure that I have enough propane for the propane grill and my outside stove. I have a camp stove, a really nice one from Uncle Ziggy that my parents never unpacked in the 1980s. Still works great. Unpacked, it is from mid-1980s and mint condition. So I make sure I have enough fuel for that. I make sure I have enough fuel for the grill. And I make sure at our old house where we had a fire place, I made sure that we had enough for fires, for the fireplace, for heating, which came in very handy during Superstorm Sandy, I assure you. For driving, increase following distances, brake gently, and watch weather reports before leaving home. And if roads are hazardous, consider postponing non-essential travel. Take it from one who got into an accident when he was 21 years old in a snowstorm. Not something you want to do. If I had it to do over again, I would never do that again. Tips for your specific needs. Preparing doesn't have to break the bank. Some populations need extra care. Simple fixes, right? Weather stripping, insulation, close off unused rooms to retain heat, but make sure that they're not going to have pipes freezing, right? Older adults and vulnerable neighbors, check in on older adults and those with limited mobility. Maybe help out your neighbor, clear off their stairs. And for outdoor workers and sports enthusiasts, dress in layers, protect exposed skin, and limit time outdoors. Pardon me. In extreme cold, always let someone know your route and carry a fully charged cell phone. I got the little batteries. What do I got one here? Yeah, I got one. I'm not making any endorsements, but this is my external battery, one of them for my cell phones. This is actually for my battery heated gloves. Here, always make sure that everything is all nice and heated. By taking a few simple steps, now you can confidently embrace this, right? It takes about 2 weeks to fully prepare. And here we have youth under youth initiatives here. So FEMA Region 9 highlights service-minded youth. The past summer, 26 youths from across the region received service and career-building opportunities as members of the 2024 FEMA Region 9 Youth Preparedness Council. These impressive youths for age 14 to 18 worked to provide FEMA with messaging for National Preparedness Month in September. The youth made videos and print materials. Again, our big push here is in September for National Preparedness Month here. And now we have things planned, big things, right? Just because your family members, maybe other members of your community don't want to prepare for emergencies doesn't mean that you have to not prepare for emergencies. The Youth Preparedness Council is now recruiting the next generation of emergency managers. And you can check that out on the FEMA webpage for Emergency Youth Preparedness Council. And prepare with Pedro Winter Storm Storybook, now available for download. Hey, I just got this today, guys. So the Prepare with Pedro Winter Storm Storybook is the latest in a series of storybooks released by FEMA and the American Red Cross, featuring Pedro as he goes on adventures. It looks like a penguin, Pedro the penguin, right? As he goes through, yeah, we got a puffer here too, right? My Aunt Sophie gave me this. She asked me to have it on my desk. So who am I to say no to a nun, right? Released in English and Spanish for the children in kindergarten through second grade. This storybook follows Pedro through the preparedness penguin as he navigates what to do before, during, and after a winter storm. You can download his storybooks and others by visiting Prepare with Pedro on ready.gov. Here we have the Community Emergency Response Team. North Carolina CERT volunteers respond to Hurricane Helene. During the relief efforts for Hurricane Helene in North Carolina, more than 200 Community Emergency Response Team volunteers logged more than 3,500 hours, and many of them never even left home. And they were manning things. You know, again, get involved with your local community emergency response team. They are normally managed by your county emergency responders or firefighters. NFIP, National Flood Insurance Program, to strengthen urban and suburban resilience. They continued outreach in Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, and Washington to raise awareness. The campaign began on October 14th and ran through December 9th, talking about flooding. And here's some important dates here. January 8th was today. I just got a day. Best of CERT Conference 2024. January 15th, human trafficking. We're going to talk about that a little bit in a couple minutes. Building an inclusive emergency management workforce. What every emergency manager should know about space, weather, storms. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. February, March, April. Check it out here, and we will cover as appropriate. Let's go on over to our, let's put on some music here, and we will prepare for our next section.
Mechanical birds above our heads, watching secrets and the streets we tread. Be
leaping lights and wings of chrome guiding paths as we roam. In New Jersey skies, they hover high, whispers carried by the night. Silent judges in the drone, leading us to the unknown. Eyes in the sky, they never sleep. Dreams and secrets they will keep. New Jersey nights feel so surreal when the drones reveal what they conceal.
That is Safety Warrior with Eyes in the Sky. So a lot of stuff going on. We have VOA News here. That's Voice of America News. I only share government websites because they're open source, non-copyrighted, open, you know, and they're anybody could look at them or use them just as you attributed to them, right? That's for the U.S. I get complaints, just like with the royalty-free music that we make and music we create here. Well, you know, we get complaints, right? Not successful, except for one thing. It wasn't successful. But former President Jimmy Carter lies in state at the Capitol. Thousands of people brave freezing weather to come to the U.S. Capitol to pay their respects to former President Jimmy Carter, who lay in state Wednesday in the heart of American democracy ahead of his pomp-filled state funeral. I tell you what, even though we are not a monarchy here, with our state funerals, we put a lot of countries to shame on there, you know? It's just incredible. The ceremony, the pomp, the ceremony, I watched a little bit yesterday. I did not today. I had to take care of some stuff. You know, we have work to do. We have money to be made. We have people to visit. So anyway, I plan on watching some of the funeral tomorrow. And rest in peace. Now, our condolences go out to the president and his family, and right, the president, Jimmy Carter's family, and workers. What amazed me was that they actually had people from his cabinet there. I'm thinking, man, those people in the cabinet, usually you're in presidential cabinet, you're not going to be 20 years old. You're going to be in your 40s or 50s, right? Someone more experienced, maybe a little bit younger. But that was 40 years ago. These people are like 70, 80, 90 years old, and they're not around anymore. Most of those people died here, unfortunately. They still had people there who worked with them there. So mourners who included numerous elected officials and Vice President Kamala Harris highlighted the achievements and the humanity of the 100-year-old who died last month. Dave Smith, a professor at the Carter School for Peace and Conflict Resolution at George Mason University, said that the former president obviously impacted his career. He told VOA that he came to the Capitol to honor the man, but also to honor Carter's causes. He had such an impact on so many people. His work on advancing minorities, appointments of women to the judiciary, protecting our environment, and advocating for human rights, all those things are very important things to me. And he also, under him, the Stafford Act, and this is not in the article, was passed, which was FEMA, right? Set up FEMA out there. And how we respond to emergencies. That was all because of TMI. And we do have the former health and safety director from Three Mile Island who tunes in every once in a while. So if you're out there, I'll say her first name, Dawn. If you're out there, Dawn, have a nice night, right? And Happy New Year. What's funny is my one Sunday school teacher, that was Dawn. She was one of the safety directors for Three Mile Island nuclear plant, and another safety certified industrial hygienist, very well known here in New Jersey for the old timers out there, Andrew Stofa from Metuchen, New Jersey. He was a certified industrial hygienist, so. What does that say? You know, all from the same church, three health and safety professionals at very high, you know, I do what I do, but they were, you know, very prestigious what the other dude did, right? Biden signs emergency declaration for California wildfires. I mean, there, as of the beginning of this program tonight, these things were largely out of control. Some people said completely out of control. And the LA County Fire Department faced four life-threatening wildfires that have killed at least two people and burned more than 1,000 buildings and forced tens of thousands of people to evacuate. Now, what I'm seeing here with a lot of stuff, people are shaming and blaming the victims here. All right. Part of this, right, this has a couple of different layers to the onion here. Number one, you don't want to, you know, a lot of these are homeowners and everything else. You're like, well, they shouldn't be living in high fire frequency areas. Well, guess what? Every area in this country has its own issues. We've seen with the hurricanes down southeastern United States, wildfires out west, deep freezes through the interior. Out here in New Jersey, New York area, we have our share of problems with all different. I mean, we had an earthquake last year. It didn't cause damage, but freaked people out. We had wildfires here. We have unrest. We have all different types of issues here. We had Superstorm Sandy. So there are we're right by all of these targets off on the FEMA maps on that target for nuclear attack. So we have, right in my neighborhood, we have Pfizer. Up until recently, we had Indian Point on the other side of the river. We have West Point up north here. We have over in northern New Jersey, you have the pharmaceutical plants. Those are nuclear targets, as well as power plants. So, you know, we have this stuff all over the place. Every area has their own. So let's not victim shame here. Now, the other thing is this. Reportedly, Los Angeles cut their budget for the firefighters. Did that have an impact on their response? That's a very good question, number one. Number two, there was a report that they lowered standards for firefighters. Don't know if that's true. Maybe that needs to be looked into. Number three, right, forestry management and things. This, maybe you can blame the victim a little bit here. Okay, no, people aren't maintaining their property. Here's the other question. Are they allowed to maintain their property? Don't know, right, with this. So what I am calling for is a complete investigation here as far as what the what caused the fires, because there were always when these wildfires turn up, often they are man-made. Right, were these man-made? Now, you're going to say, well, Jimmy, you're nuts, blah, blah, blah. Well, people have gotten convicted for setting wildfires. My question is this, and we do know it is a technique of terrorism, and it's in their plan of terrorists. Yes, I said the word, the T word, terrorists, to try to probe, to try to see what our response will be, maybe to try to overload our emergency response system. That is one of their techniques. So, for example, with the Twin Towers, the original bombing, I believe it was February 1993, for that, I saw a memorial for this today when I had to take care of some business. They what's not well known is that after the first bombs went off in the parking garage of the World Trade Center in New York, and there were other bombs that were set to go off that did not go off to take out the emergency responders. With the 9/11, it was bombed, right? The planes were driven into, and I don't want to get into this big debate, were they really there or not? I saw them with my own two eyes, right? Did the planes fly in? I saw one with my own two eyes, the second one. With that, now... So it goes in, flies into the tower. Now you have emergency responders in there, and then the tower collapsed. Now you have hundreds of emergency responders killed. Now we had one definite terrorist attack here on New Year's Eve, possibly a second one that they're saying, well, it wasn't a terrorist attack, it was a distraught person. Okay, fair enough, right? Well, we definitely have one terrorist attack. My question is this. Here we have, was this man-made fire? Was this man started? Or are we getting our emergency response systems overloaded here in California? Don't know. That's a question that has to happen. That has a thing there has to be asked. Now, we're getting, right, we're coming up to an inauguration now in 12 days. Here is one, say, January 8th, 2025. People are saying, oh, there's terrorist attack, terrorist attack, terrorist attack, terrorist attack, right, here over the next few weeks. My question is this a prelude to something else? I don't think that's an unreasonable question, and I'm going to dub this, take this out of the, you know, this, and I'll put it up on Instagram. I'm questioning this whole thing here with this. And again, if you can lend a hand, there. And I'm sure that there's going to be donations up there. I know, God, donate to a legitimate charity when you're out there. Here is from also from VOA. I wish I could use the Sammy Hagar song. I'm dying to use the Sammy Hagar song as an intro to this, but I can't. Right, VOA has a song in the 80s. European Union rebuffs Trump's designs on Greenland takeover. The EU on Wednesday dismissed U.S. President-elect Donald Trump's refusal to rule out a military attack to take control of Denmark's autonomous territory of Greenland as a wild hypothetical stuff, while confirming that EU states would be compelled to defend the island if Trump invaded it. Ever occurred to you that, you know, we've had 4 years of Donald Trump already, that a lot of times his hyperbole and these wild outrageous statements, like renaming the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America, did it ever occur to you that maybe this is an opening for a negotiation here, making a better deal? Because he did write a book, or he write Art of the Deal. And this is one of the strategies, is make outrageous statements and then negotiate. By the way, I learned that in graduate school and JIT, that this is also a technique of a lot of people in activism, where people, when they encourage activists to go out there and make strange statements out there, and then you go and they say, well, we weren't really serious and blah, blah, blah. And then, hey, look, we're not as crazy as them. Maybe you want to deal with us. And then you negotiate, and thus becomes the idea of incrementalism, where we're moving things one direction a little bit at a time. Yeah, it happens. You know, one of the statements, I forget who it was, one of the quotes that sticks out of my mind is, we don't need another radical environmental group. We need a radical environmental group, and then the ones that are less radical, right, we need a real radical one, then the ones who are less radical are able to negotiate better. They seem reasonable. Remember, that's all part of the game. That's all part of the mind game that we are being played with constantly in this country. As for Trump's refusal to rule out military action to take over Greenland, a European Commission spokesperson said, we are talking about a fairly wild hypothetical stuff that hasn't come up yet. Another spokesman added that sovereignty of states had to be respected as a matter of principle. As if Greenland was covered by a mutual defense clause binding EU members to assist each other, Commission spokesperson Paula Pino said that was the case. I don't know. Is it possible? I don't know what we're going to see on January 20th here. There all is in there. Okay, that's all I have here for that on VOA news. You can see on the website. I'm just scrolling through some of the fires and everything else here. Well, let's remember, Trump has got to get through the 10th before he gets to the 20th here. Now, this is, and if you have small children, or if you have been sexually assaulted or anything like that, anything like triggering, I'm going to give you a couple of seconds to maybe turn this on. Maybe you want to skip this. I don't want to upset anybody here.
Safety Wars is streaming now.
SafetyFM.com.
It's Safety Wars. From the front lines of the Safety War, it's Safety Wars. With your host, Jim Posel on Safety FM. Get ready to face the harsh reality.
Yeah, we're going to face the harsh reality here. This is a story I've been sitting on here for about 3 years. I've been keeping up with it for at least 3 years. This is a story from the New York Times here. And since it's now in the New York Times, I feel comfortable with sharing it here. I feel like sharing it here. And this is from New York Times. The story is today. Yesterday. Updated today. Reporting Megan Specia, reporting from London. What is the UK grooming gang scandal seized on by Elon Musk? And if I can, for the complete disclosure here, I am on the witness list for a huge sexual abuse scandal here in New Jersey. So just letting you know, I'm not being accused. I'm on the witness list for the defense here. Witness list for the plaintiffs here. So there's some disclosure here. So I've been keeping up with these cases here. In other words, the person doing the suing has me on the list and I've been notified. What is the UK grooming gang scandal seized on by Elon Musk? The billionaire tech mogul has been posting on his social media platform about a decade-old child sex abuse scandal in Britain. Here's what to know. Elon Musk, the billionaire tech mogul, has flung himself into British politics in recent weeks, using his social media platform X to attack and spread misinformation about Prime Minister Keir Starmer and other members of the Labour government. In a series of vitriolic posts to his 211 million followers in recent days, Mr. Musk has falsely accused Mr. Starmer and other Labour Party members of enabling Britain's so-called grooming gangs. The phrase returns to a decade-old scandal involving a series of child sex abuse scandals in which girls were assaulted and raped by gangs of men in several towns and cities. Most of the perpetrators are of British Pakistani heritage. Mr. Musk's posts included multiple inaccuracies and treated a widely covered issue as if it had never been mentioned. Tell you what, we didn't really hear about it in this country, but if you read the European papers, you got an earful here. But the post nevertheless casts a spotlight back onto a painful child exploitation scandal that troubled Britain and has long provoked heated debate on issues of race, immigration, and abuse. In 2011, Times of London published a series of investigative articles on sexual exploitation of girls by criminal gangs in England's North and Midlands from 1997 onward. One detective at the time, Chief Inspector Alan Edwards, told the paper, "Everyone's been too scared to address the ethnicity factor." The cases came to known as grooming gang scandal. But basically, what it came down to is that people felt that things shouldn't have been pursued because, or were being covered up because of the ethnicity and immigration status of the perpetrators here. And again, that's where the whole scandal is. I'm reading it from the New York Times. I'm not going to really offer an opinion here other than say, information is good. Like Todd Conklin says, information does not make us more stupid. And if you just go out and I'm telling you, vet the information on this, vet the information you hear off of Twitter or any of these other stuff. I mean, the mainstream media has completely lost credibility for everyone who I've spoken to since last election. Well, guess what? It's because this stuff really doesn't get covered in this country here. People think that it doesn't exist. It doesn't happen. We have our share of these kinds of scandals in this country, accusations. So one of the questions that's out there, right, for us, and I'll phrase this question, where are these 300,000 plus children who never got processed by immigration? That's the Associated Press saying that, not Jimmy Poelzel with that number. All right. And believe me, Associated Press is not right wing. So again, what's the situation here? Right. Get your information. Make sure you research things before you make things, because now we have all different things. I mean, I could go on to Wikipedia has a whole bunch of stuff here and everything else. Now, what can we do? Well, talking about safety, you got to have, and my wife has had a conversation with both children. I have had a conversation with both children on what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. And we make sure that we get involved with groups where they actually vet the adults in charge. One of the sports teams that I'm aware of here in town, it used to be that you had your child in a sport, you would go and you're able to watch them practice. One organization realized that, look, everybody who works for the organization has been vetted. They've been background checked. They've been interviewed. Any inappropriate behavior, they're sent packing, right? And everything else with this and everything else. But they came to the realization that, yes, they vetted the workers, but did they vet the parents and the visitors and anybody else that was coming in? And they said, well, you know what? We have closed practices. You're not allowed in the building here. And they have a web link where you're allowed to view on camera from like a surveillance camera up from the 1980s up in the upper right-hand corner of their facility to see what's going on. Very low resolution. Because they're like, look, we know that we are good, but how do we know who's coming in here and what they're going to say or do here? We're not vetting. We're not sending parents out for background checks here, right? Here's another one from the BBC.com. Police pedophiles, more than 30 guilty since January 2022. More than 30 police and support officers have been convicted of child sex abuse offenses in England and Wales since January 2022. And they say there is no pedophile ring in any of these countries. So my question here for us in the United States, where are these 300,000 kids? We know that they're ending up in illegal child labor, probably because we're seeing reports off of the Department of Labor webpage of underage workers all the time doing things. So we know that where some of them are going, should be something raised by the new administration. And I'm going to write that one down on specifically, let me put that child workers, right? Here. So probably a good question to ask here. Not that I have an inside path here to anybody in the new administration, but, here we have an article that just came out in the Wall Street Journal. At the beginning of the program, U.S. dock workers and port employers reach a labor deal. The tentative agreement averts a potential strike at ports from Maine to Texas. So if you recall, we had a very brief strike recently for the dock workers. Well, guess what? Now they averted this here with this here. So the agreement reached in principle verbally on Wednesday must still be ratified by port employers by tens of thousands of members of the International Longshoremen's Union, according to people involved with the talks, and they have until January 15th to reach an agreement. Thank God. They got that. Okay. So here we have more UK news here. This is from the Epoch Times today. Article by Lily Zhu. Shine representative declines to address China cotton questions at the UK hearing. Liam Byrne, chair of the Business and Trade Committee, said the lawyer's reluctance to answer questions bordered on contempt of the community. A lawyer for Chinese fashion brand Shine was accused of disrespecting British members of parliament, MPs, after failing to answer questions about the origin of the company's cotton products at a hearing on Tuesday. Yinwang Zhu, Yinan Zhu, Shine's general counsel for Europe, told the MPs on the Business and Trade Committee that some of the Shine suppliers are in China. She repeatedly declined to say whether any of Shine's products contain cotton from China or from the country's Xinjiang region after being pressed several times by the committee. Now, let's go on over to Department of Labor news here, because we are a safety show. We talk about Department of Labor. So this is from today. U.S. Department of Labor Office of Trade, Office of the Trade Representative, seek review of alleged denial of labor rights at a tire manufacturing facility in Mexico. The U.S.-Mexico-Canada's Agreement Interagency Labor Committee for Monitoring and Enforcement today requested that the government of Mexico review an alleged denial of workers' rights at a certain facility which runs tire manufacturing facilities, Mexico City and Tulitlan, Mexico. The request follows the December 9, 2024 petition filed by the labor union Sindicato Nacional de Trabajadores de la Compañía Hulera Tornel Sociedad Anónima de Capital Variable de la República Mexicana. I know Jay Allen is laughing right now at my pronunciation, but I do okay. The U.S. Department of Labor and the U.S. Trade Representative co-chair of the Interagency Labor Community. At the Interagency Labor Committee, after the committee found sufficient and credible evidence supporting the petition's allegation, the U.S. government submitted a request for review to the Mexican government. And this is from, who is it? Deputy Undersecretary of International Affairs, Thay Lee. Every Mexican worker in the rubber industry deserves full benefits negotiated in a sector-wide agreement. Any company attempting to skirt providing these benefits is violating Mexican labor law and the provisions of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. We went over that agreement here. It's got really no teeth here. Look, we look forward to continuing our collaboration with the Mexican government to ensure these workers reserve what they are due. And you could go and read it in here. I don't know how this is going to change with the new administration. U.S. Department of Labor recovers more than 1 million wages and damages from California ice manufacturers that knowingly shortchanged 70 workers. This is out of San Diego. Maybe they could send some ice up to that fire up there. 70 employees of two California ice manufacturers will receive their share of more than $1 million in back wages and damages recovered by the U.S. Department of Labor after investigators determined the company's common ownership withheld $527,687 in overtime pay. Right? So they failed to pay them time and a half. Failed to track the pay, allegedly. And they're being accused of it being willful. And remember, everything is, everyone is innocent until proven guilty. Here we have, hold on. More stuff. All right. Oh, I lost the story here. But basically, there was, and it struck me as pretty unusual here. Okay, here it is. This is from Kansas City, Missouri. This is from an accident that happened over the weekend, I guess. Posted on January 8th. Jackson County story is from Fox4KC.com. Jackson County says it's not to blame in the death of one of its employees who died on the job over the weekend. It's county policy, if in doubt, tow it out. It's county policy, if in doubt, tow it out. Schulte places the fault on the 61-year-old Everett Carter, whose county truck struck him as he tried to tow another county vehicle. The county executive Frank White is less sure in responses as he tells Fox 4 in his 10 years of being here in Jackson County, "This is the way things have always worked, and there's no need to change anything, even in light of Carter's passing. All we know right now is that Carter is dead and the county is running from accountability. These individuals thought they could get the vehicle unstuck themselves. I appreciate their commitment. 2020 hindsight, they should have walked away and towed the vehicle." Fox 4 followed up, right? "Now, this is great, right? They were always instructed to go and get a tow truck if necessary, so that that has been a standard protocol. Okay, but here's my question." It goes on and on and on here. All right. And there's some controversy here, is that message sent, message received, message reinforced. Right? Are they saying our official policy is that you tow the truck and not to mess with it? And then they say, well, and then somebody does that and they start screaming and yelling, cursing them out and giving them an incentive not to do that. Does that ever happen in safety business? You're damn right it happens in safety business almost every day. What do you need to wear that safety lens? What do you need to wear that harness? What do you mean you got to tie off? What do you mean you got to use a hierarchy of controls? What do you mean you need a respirator? What do you mean you need this? We've heard it over and over and over and over again. Right? And what I'm shocked about, and I guess it's some progress where we have, and I'm going to commend Fox 4 KC for calling these people out and other people calling these things out. All right? I tell you what, if they're your employees, unless it's something totally freaking egregious, which is extremely difficult to prove in a court of law, they're your employees. If they get hurt, they're your responsibility. Now, my question is this. Kansas City, Missouri. Does Missouri have a state OSHA for public? Let's see what the AI says. Missouri does, and this is from federal OSHA exercises jurisdiction over most private employers in the state of Missouri. Federal employers in Missouri also operate under this jurisdiction of federal OSHA. Therefore, OSHA regulations apply to all private employers in the state. Blah, blah, blah. Right? The state of Missouri has a state law requiring most workers on publicly funded construction sites to possess a 10-hour card. Right? Let's see. Do they have an actual OSHA state plan? Missouri is under federal OSHA jurisdiction. State and local governments and workers are not covered under federal OSHA. Okay, are they under state OSHA? Is there a state OSHA? Is there a state OSHA in Missouri? Mm-hmm. Missouri occupy, all right. No, it doesn't look like they have a state plan. So I'm going to say, I don't know, and I can't find the answer right here, but that's a question here with this. All right. Hold on, OSHA state plans. State plans. Missouri does not have a state-approved plan. All right. So, additionally, there are state plans limited to the public sector in Connecticut, Illinois, Maine, New Jersey, New York, and U.S. Virgin Islands. So, again, let's put this into context. Maybe, right? So, in a certain sense, these public employees saying that we're not responsible for anything. Well, yeah, well, there's no state plan. And if there is one, like in New York, they don't enforce anything and they're useless. Right. And I'm sorry, that's what I hear from the people who have to deal with them on a daily basis here. They're very, very ineffective. They have no teeth. They have, right? They know, right? So what am I calling for? As always, I'm calling for sovereign immunity to be repealed in the areas of workplace safety and environmental stuff, and start holding people criminally liable, managers and everything else, for not doing their job like they do in New York with competent persons in the construction industry. That's what I call for, right? Sorry, guys. I know that's controversial, but maybe I shouldn't be saying that, but I'm going to say that. You know, dodging responsibility does not eliminate responsibility. So that's all I got for tonight. We are going to kind of close here. I'm going to do the outro, and God willing, I'll see you tomorrow night. You got me three nights in a row here on Safety FM.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not